Okay, and we are live. Welcome to the 33rd episode of our series, How to Become Fluent in English. Today, we're joined with a really special guest, and today we're going to be discussing how to improve your speaking skills, but more specifically, the main reasons and the main hurdles for why you guys are probably struggling to speak in English. So before we start, Em, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
Okay, hi everyone. My channel is English with Em. Been teaching for about, I guess it's 13 years now, teaching English. And I decided to start my YouTube channel, I think it was about 3 years ago, because my students were always saying, oh, you should do it, you should do it. So I did that. And now I'm also on Instagram and TikTok. Facebook too, although I've been slack and I haven't used Facebook in a while, so I need to get back on that.
Okay, sweet. And do you know any other languages fluently as well, or is it just English for you?
I speak Spanish. I feel a little rusty at the moment. Normally I live in Spain, but I've been visiting a friend for a couple of months now. Okay. Feeling a little rusty.
Okay, sweet. Good to know. And Adu, I'm watching live. Okay. Shout out to you, Adu. Shout out to the people here from YouTube. I see some of you guys popping in from YouTube and Facebook. As you're coming in, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us where you're from, what your native language is. And if you have any questions throughout the stream, just jump right into the chat, ask away, and we'll periodically stop and we'll answer whatever questions you guys have. So Abba Chan, hi teacher. Hello, Abba. Shout out to you. Hi. Welcome back. Sam, I love the English language. Don't we all? Kiribati, hi. Hello. Welcome. Welcome to the stream. Okay, so to start, Em, in your experience, through all the people you've helped learn English via social media or formally, typically, what do you think is the biggest error that people make when they go about improving their speaking skills?
I think a lot of people, the biggest thing is confidence. And one thing that is a really good idea that people don't tend to do, and I understand why they don't do it, is to record themselves and listen to it back. Because you often have an idea of your speaking skills, and most of the time you're better than you think. So I think actually can improve confidence if you listen to yourself back.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then tangibly, what do you think are steps people can take to become confident speaking? Because I'm sure you've heard it before. They all say, I can understand English, but I have trouble speaking it. And they're looking for what they could maybe even do daily to improve their speaking or improve their confidence at least. Are there any other drills you'd maybe recommend that they would that they could do on a daily basis?
Well, one thing that's really important, as you say, is to do something every day. It's a really good idea to take something like a podcast where there are native speakers and just practice it, imitate a short bit of it, whether you record yourself and listen to it back or not. But ideally, every day, talk to yourself even. And in a perfect world, you would have a speaking partner. This is something a lot of people ask me about, like, where can I find a native speaker? And one thing, if you live in a big town, especially a university town, you're always going to find a language exchange cafe or something, somewhere you can go and find native speakers and talk with them. And it's usually, you know, sort of a bit in your native language that they want to learn, and then a bit in English as well. And that's really useful. So yeah, the cafe, obviously not every day, but if you could do that once a week, then it's a big help because they can correct you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, guys, for the people listening, it's easy to find. You could just go search it on Facebook. You could probably find a bunch of Facebook groups, I'm sure, for language exchanges if you're in a big city. If you're in a smaller country that doesn't have a lot of exposure to native English speakers or just a small town, I'd recommend using the app HelloTalk. I'm not sponsored by them at all, but I used it when I had to learn the French language here in Canada. It's very easy to find native speakers who would be happy to help you, native English speakers who'd be happy to help you. And you don't have to just reach out to one. You can reach out to a bunch. There's an abundance of them there. So if that's something you guys are struggling with, I highly recommend you just go take a peek at that and problem solved. Basically problem solved. So, and speaking of which, there's a lot of people out there who are trying to learn English, but they have limited exposure to native speakers or just English in general. What advice would you give for people in a country like Iran, or maybe a country that has very limited exposure to interacting and conversing with native speakers?
Yeah, oof, that's difficult. I think the best thing, one of the reasons why I think people find it hard to communicate in English is the pronunciation. It's weird pronunciation. And unless you know the phonetic alphabet or you've heard the words said, then I think that's a big barrier. So if you can, like, my favorite app actually, and I don't know if this is available in all countries, is Word Reference. I find it, particularly for Spanish anyway, it's very good. So if you use an app like that, every day, work on your vocabulary, go into the app, listen to the word so you can hear how it's said, repeat it. They also have example sentences for everything, which is really helpful. So I would say that if you're not able to speak with a native speaker, then try to do it that way. Like, read as much as possible. But I mean, reading is one thing. You really need the pronunciation as well.
Yeah, that's true. And especially try to read aloud. Use the shadowing technique as well. If you can read subtitles while consuming English media, those are all very proven ways to work. Yeah. Don't expect to see extreme results after doing it one time. Make sure that you're doing it consistently. That's something I see a lot. People drastically underestimate just how much practice it actually takes to become a natural speaker in another language. It'll take more than what you think it takes, more often than not. So,
yeah. And as far as media goes, you know, TV is great, but you need to be careful that you kind of pitch at your right level. So when I first started learning Spanish, for example, I used to watch cartoons. And that way, you'll find it much easier. If you're trying to watch something that, you know, where the level is way over your head, it's going to be much more difficult.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're going to get really frustrated and you're not going to see a lot of progress very quickly if you're listening to something that is way above your level and you can only understand like 10-20% of what's being said. It'll be absolutely a challenge. Abdu here says, appreciate your effort, teacher. Shout out to you, Abdu. Welcome back. Sam Sao, thank you, brother. I learned from your TikTok, which is about some alternative words. Okay. Thank you, Sam. Can't thank you enough, brother, about what you always doing in TikTok in regards to some alternative words of saying. Okay. Thank you. Shout out to you, Sam. And yeah, throughout the stream, if you guys have any questions regarding how to improve your speaking, don't be shy. You can ask away and we will do our best to help you out. Now, Em, what do you say to the people who are afraid of making errors when they speak, the people who have speaking anxiety, the people, how can they overcome that hurdle of hesitation?
This is tough. I'm one of those people. So this is a big hurdle for me in my second language. And I have friends who are not afraid. They just speak. And actually I found they improved much faster than I did because they weren't afraid to speak. So the confidence thing is a big issue. Yeah, how to overcome that? Practice, 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 practice. And it can be difficult in a social situation, but if you, one thing you can do, and you can do this at home, and you can do this every day, actually, is to think of common scenarios or the things that might come up in conversation. If it's a social situation, people might ask you, how was your weekend? What did you do last night? These kinds of questions. So, in your free time, write down some answers to these questions. Take your time, think about it. If there's vocabulary that you find you don't have, look it up. So, create little scripts for typical scenarios. And then, when those things do actually come up, you'll find it much easier to talk about them. Yeah.
No, that's a pretty good method. I actually agree with that. And then it's even, and just keep in mind that, yeah, even for native English speakers, speaking is something that we have to practice too. When people deliver speeches, presentations, and whatnot, even as native speakers, we do have to prepare for that mentally and even physically by training our mouths to articulate things in a certain way. So I know it's challenging, but believe me, we all understand that, but it's absolutely doable if you apply your skills and if you apply the way that you practice the correct way. So,
Yeah, for sure.
and Josh Smith, you're awesome. Why is English so intricate?
Ooh, okay. I think that's because it evolved from so many other languages. It's a real like hodgepodge of, like Greek, French, Latin, German. There's all this stuff going on, a blending of rules, pronunciations. So I think that's probably why.
I mean, yeah, that's a better answer than what I can give. I would just say, I didn't invent the English language. It just is what it is. But, and yeah, I guess it depends which language you compare it to as well, because English, it's actually not as old as a lot of other languages you'll hear in Europe. So we actually use a lot of loan words from other languages such as French, Spanish, etc. So when you hear that in English, it's probably because it's a newer language relative to the other ones. And Dell, hey everyone, what's up? Hey Dell, welcome back. Bienvenue. And Zaydeen, hi from Kurdistan. Okay, cool. Shout out to Kurdistan. Shout out to the Kurdish. And so when it comes to people who have inadequate vocabulary, let's say their vocabulary is really limited and that's holding them back from expressing themselves in a multitude of different ways. What can people do to improve their English vocabulary? What can they do daily to effectively do that?
Okay, that's a kind of a tough question because everyone learns in different ways. Like I have students who are very visual. One of my students told me he never forgets the word spear because in his mind he imagines Britney Spears throwing a spear. And it's that, the combination of an image with the word that he brings to mind, that for him is a really good way of learning new vocabulary. So that's one way, mnemonics, like I still remember when I was in school learning moon voyage ends Monday, gym send up nine parachutes. And this was a way to help me remember the order of the planets. So things like that. Personally, what I tend to do is I'm a list maker, and this doesn't work for everyone, but when I was a beginner and I wanted to learn, for example, bathroom vocabulary, I created a list. That list went everywhere. It went on my door, it went on my wall, it was on the fridge, it was on the mirror. So everywhere, it was in the bathroom, it was in the bedroom, in the living room. So you're constantly looking at that list and that vocabulary, and taking it in. I also have notebooks filled with vocabulary and example sentences, which is another good idea. Example sentence, something relevant to your life. But to be honest, have I gone back and looked at them after I first wrote them? No. So helpful in the beginning, but you need to keep going back. You need to have repetition.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And I actually did the same thing. I thought it was really effective. I'd make a flashcard deck just based on one day I just woke up in my room and I just looked at every single object in my room and just said, which ones do I know in French? Which ones do I not know? For all the ones that I didn't know, I just compile a list. And for those listening, I really recommend the application Anki, Anki, when it comes to flashcards, because it simply shows you the flashcards, and each time it shows you one, you can put how well you understand it on a scale of like 1 to 4. If you understand it really well, you put a 4. If you don't understand it well at all, you can put a 1. And then it will keep feeding you the flashcards more frequently that you don't understand very well. This is actually a proven method, even way back in time before computers. They still use this method as well. And it's highly effective. So I highly recommend that to people who are trying to improve their vocabulary quickly. And like you said, Em, I'm just putting it everywhere. If you go everywhere with your phone, essentially, you can use this app when you're on the bus, when you're commuting, when you're walking. You can just constantly keep feeding your brain more and more and more and more vocabulary. And believe me, once you do it like a million times, it will wash over. It will feel natural. The only thing I'll say is the most important thing about this is that you actually also practice saying these words and training your mouth to pronounce them when it comes to speaking. There's lots of people who read a ton, they listen a ton, they can totally understand English, they can't speak for the very simple fact that they just don't speak enough. You are simply not speaking enough. You're simply not training your mouth to say or articulate words or express your thoughts enough. It's actually it always comes down to that, it seems. And Kokoraka, hello. My question is it possible to achieve a near native level in listening and reading without output? Sorry for my grammar. So if I understand correctly, can you achieve almost a native English speaking level or native English level in listening and reading without output? I'm not sure what you mean by output.
I guess that would be the productive skills, like speaking and writing.
Right.
So,
Well, yes, I would say that it's possible. That's my short answer. What do you think, Em?
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Yeah, it's 'cause I mean, yeah, that's basically the whole trope that I can understand English, but I can't speak it. So yes, if you exercise those skills, if you listen and if you consume English media of native speakers speaking, if you do that habitually for a year or years at a time, it will definitely wash over. It'll definitely become natural. The only thing I'll say, and it's an important point that M brought up earlier, is that this will only happen if you practice gradually. If you listen to media that is way out of your league, where you cannot understand most of what's being said, you're not going to see progress very quickly. I promise you will not see progress quickly. A lot of people think, okay, I'm just going to listen to watch TV or watch something that's really advanced or really sophisticated or really complicated. And if I just watch it, if I just listen, if I just observe how English speakers speak, I'm going to become a native speaker too, or I'm going to like advance my skills to that level if I just consume it enough. No, unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. You do need to take smaller steps to advancing your listening and reading skills alike. So.
Yeah, for sure.
And Natalie, hello. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hello. Shout out to you, Natalie. Abba Chan, how many hours a day should I study English to make it more effective?
Okay. Hours a day. I mean, oof, to be honest, I think that even 10 minutes a day is beneficial. So whatever you're doing is good. And ultimately, it's going to depend on your goal. If somebody working towards proficiency, for example, is going to, they should be immersing themselves as much as possible. But I think at a lower level, probably it's better not to go, excuse me, not to go overboard. So, yeah, an hour. Personally, for a class anyway, I think an hour and a half really is as long as it should be. I think longer than that, and you start to kind of switch off. You need to take breaks.
Definitely. Yeah, I would say that in terms of taking a class or consuming information on how to learn English, I would keep that to a minimum. Like Em just said, like you can even do an hour, but the most important thing is that you're actually actively applying what you've learned. That's what's going to make you fluent. That's what's going to take you to the next level. That's what's going to have you progress. If you consume all the theory in the world, if you read a lot, if you listen a lot, but you never speak, you never write, you never articulate your thoughts, express your opinions, form a brain in English, if you never do this, if you never physically do it, then you're not going to see results anytime soon, I can promise. So when you say how many hours a day, that also depends on where you are in the world. Like Em said, if you're trying to become proficient, it should be a lifestyle. It should be like from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed. If you're in an English speaking region, this is going to be a lot easier to do than if you're not. If you're not in an English speaking region and you're not surrounded by it, then at every moment I can get, or every moment you can get, you should try to speak with yourself, even if it's having a conversation with yourself. You should try to be listening at all times. If you're ever commuting, if you ever have a time to just put some headphones in or whatnot, every moment in the day where you'll just have an opportunity to exercise one of your English skills, you should be doing it. I can't give you a definite amount of hours. I would just say if you're trying to progress really quickly, just do it as much as possible. Until you start seeing results, and you will see results quicker if you do it with that intensity. But
And change the language of your phone, your
yeah.
computer. Put
Yep.
it in English, make sure that when you're listening to the news, the radio, have it in English where possible as well.
Exactly. If you drive, whenever you're driving, play an English podcast, play some sort of English media, English music. I don't know how helpful that can be. Yeah.
Yes
I
and
don't,
no.
yeah, don't really recommend it. It's good if you want to like understand English culture and kind of like understand and how they play with words, but it's really advanced. Most music I would use it as your primary source of learning. So my connection is a little cut here.
Yeah, I was like, is that me
Can you
or
hear me
you? I
now?
don't know.
I think my connection cut out for a second. Yeah, I think it was
I
me.
could hear
Well,
you like
all good.
underwater, like
Okay, Nashik. I see. Yeah, stupid Wi-Fi is what it is. Nashik, please help me like this to improve my English arc. I'm from Asia. Shoot us a message on Instagram and we'll point you in the right direction. Samsal, hello. Is there any app that can help me to improve my English grammar? I'm from the Solomon Islands. What's your advice for improving your grammar in order to become a better speaker?
I don't actually know of apps for that purpose. I tend to use books.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
My favorite series of grammar books has to be the Murphy Grammar in Use series. They've got for elementary, they've got intermediate, and they've also got advanced. They're really good. I like them because they have on it's like a double page spread. On one side you've got the explanation, and then on the other side you've got the exercises. The explanations are very, very clear. So you can find information actually on these books on my website in the blog section. There's actually only one blog post so far. I keep meaning to post more, haven't got around to it yet. Or in most of my YouTube videos, there are also book recommendations in the video descriptions. Yeah, that's my favorite. English Grammar in Use, Raymond Murphy is the main one, is the intermediate level one. They're very good.
Yeah, Sab, there you go. There's a recommendation for books. I personally use the McGraw Hill series. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, Em. That was pretty effective too. I thought it was pretty good to have like an all-in-one grammar book. It feeds you vocabulary as well as grammar simultaneously, so it's good for improving both at the same time. You can make flashcards out of the vocabulary you don't understand in their lists. You got options. You got options, Sam. But
Oh,
for
that's it.
grammar, I would
Sorry.
just, yeah, the only thing I'd say is if you're at the intermediate level, I would say you could use English books. But if you're at the beginner level, if it's possible, if the book exists in your native language, I would actually get a grammar book in your native language outlining the differences between your native language and the English language and explaining the difference in the figure of speech so you don't end up translating words like back into your native language, essentially. So, but go ahead, Em. You were saying something.
I was going to say that's if specifically for tenses, the best book that I found, it's called, it's actually a book for teachers, but I think it would actually be great for students as well. It's called Teaching Tenses. Rosemary Aitken, I think, is the author. And it's just very, very clear, very clear.
Then, yeah, there you go, Sam. There you go. Voila. Camila,
Hi,
Camelia.
yeah.
Hello from Romania. Okay, wow. Shout out to Romania. Long way. Abba Chan,
Volume.
does recording while speaking give improvements? Yeah, like Em said before. And how should she go about doing this, Em? How should Abba go about it?
Okay, so I think the best way, you want to find a native speakers kind of in a natural situation. So something like a podcast, something like this. It's really great if you can find one that has a transcript as well. And listen to a little bit. Don't try and record like 5, 10 minutes. Do small bits, I would say. Record a little bit, listen to it back, and see how close you are to the original, for sure. That will help you hopefully realize that your pronunciation is better than you realize. And if not, it'll highlight the areas that you need to work on.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think it's as simple as that. I think if you do that, another thing you can do too is I did this too when learning another language month after month. You can record yourself on the first day of each month. Then you can put into practice certain methods that you want to use to practice your speaking each month. And you can actually see if you've improved or see if you've made any results month after month, essentially. And if you can do this for 6 months to a year, like when you look at when you started at the beginning of the year and you look at the end of the year, you'll probably be really shocked at how much better of a speaker you are by that time. And it will also tell you if you don't see results, what you're doing may not be working. If you haven't seen results in 6 months to a year, I think that's enough time to see some good results. So if what you're doing isn't working, then shoot Emma a message, shoot me a message, we'll point you in the right direction and figure out what is wrong.
And one thing that's really important for speaking fluently is connected speech. It's all the weak forms. So you'll find, and that's why I think it's better to record yourself reading something where you have a reference. Like, so you're not just reading from a book, but you're reading something from, say, a podcast where you can then listen and check. Because English is full of weak forms. This is one of the main reasons I think that people find that they understand in a classroom context, and then they find themselves in a native, in England, for example, can't understand anything. It's because, we don't say, "What are you doing?" It's, "What are you doing?" It's fast. There's all these little weak forms in there. And if you just record yourself reading a passage from a book, you're going to miss those. So I think, again, it's really important to have that frame of reference where you can listen and compare.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, even when you consume English media with subtitles, then you'll notice that. You'll notice the connected speech. What are you doing versus what are you doing? Like it's yeah, it definitely definitely a nuance that you have to pay attention to, without a doubt. Canvas, I know English enough to live a life in the United States. But I don't really know the why and the hows of English since I learned it on my own without a teacher. How should I study? Well, depends on what your current level is. What would you say, Em?
Again, I guess if you've got a good level, in a way, if you know what's right, but you don't know why it's right, then you're in the kind of condition of the majority of native speakers. Because unless you teach English or have studied English, you know that it's right, but you don't know why. You couldn't explain it to somebody. Oh, yeah, we use this tense because. So I don't think that it's a bad thing if you don't really know the whys and the hows. I don't think that necessarily reflects negatively. It just means that you've learned it in that kind of implicit, natural way rather than from books. If you do want to know explicitly the whys and the hows, then you're going to have to go to grammar references and read up on it. So I would say a grammar book would be the way forward there.
Exactly. Yeah, if you want to learn the rules in detail, a grammar book will do that for you. And yeah, if you learned the language by heart, well, congratulations. That's pretty impressive, I think, if it's not your first language. But yeah, that's how us native speakers speak, because the advanced speakers who don't speak English as a first language, they actually know the grammar a lot better than a lot of native
Oh,
speakers,
yes.
because they study the details meticulously, where we just learned it by heart. So
This is why, it's been a big problem, and I think it's starting to change where there's this kind of people want a teacher who's a native speaker. There's this negative attitude towards non-native speakers as teachers. But what I would say, in my experience, they're often very, very good, and they often know the grammar much better than a lot of native speakers do. So, and because they have learned it in that way, whereas we haven't.
it's absolutely advantageous to have someone who is bilingual in English and your native language if they're, genuinely bilingual. Yes, then absolutely, that's advantageous. A lot of people say, "Oh no, I don't want to learn from anybody except for a native speaker." I mean, if you want to speak like a native speaker, then that makes sense. But if you're at the beginner level, then I think it would be way better to have someone who's bilingual for sure. If you're at the advanced level and you're trying to fine-tune things, that can make some sense. But at the beginner level, try to find someone who understands what you're going through. So, Sandy, is the phrase a little bit grammatically correct? My Brit professor then said it was wrong. Wow. If he's the one who's grading your assignments, then I guess it's wrong.
Well, yeah,
Quite a
right.
bit. Yeah. But what do you think, Em? As a native speaker, I mean, I think no one's going to check you on that. No one's going to correct you on that, if especially if you say it. Native
No.
speakers use this all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it grammatically incorrect? Not as far as I'm concerned. No.
Yeah, I never thought that was grammatically incorrect, at least here in
No.
Canada. So
Mm-mm.
there you go, Sandy. Minaj, hi, Miraj from Pakistan. Okay.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Pakistanis. Helen W. Hi. Hello, Helen.
Hi, Helen.
Welcome. Kevin, hello. What do you know? Should I improve my English listening skills? Sometimes it's hard to understand when talking to my American English speaking colleagues. They speak so fast. Sometimes it's hard to catch up. Listening skills, like Em said earlier, the connected speech is a huge nuance that will change your life when it comes to listening, I think.
Yeah, and you really need to be to have access to a script of some kind. So practice with TV, practice with podcasts, but the subtitles can be really helpful in this respect. There's all kinds, especially if you're dealing with American colleagues, there's a podcast. I think it's called All Ears English. It's a couple of American ladies. It's very good. They speak very clearly, although obviously quite quickly. And it's business related topics.
Yeah, then there you go. And even English podcasts that aren't even, there's so many out there that aren't necessarily geared towards teaching people English, but still, you'll understand faster spoken English. You'll understand more conversational English in a podcast setting, as opposed to if you watch dramatic TV shows or movies that might hinder that a bit because they may say or do things that are unrealistic. So podcasts are definitely a good call. And I would definitely use subtitles, but after you can understand, I'd use subtitles, but you have to be mindful of actually listening to what's being said as opposed to just reading the subtitles. I know that's difficult for some people. They just end up reading and they don't really listen. It's just passive. But it's important that you focus and you're really mindful and you try to do both and you try not to totally rely on the subtitles, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and vary it. Watch something with subtitles, watch something without, because it is really hard to focus on the listening when you've got the subtitles there. Another thing you can do in that respect, which I guess is easier with a podcast than it is with something on TV, is to listen to it without any script. Just listen. Then listen to it again with the tape script, or read the tape script and see how much you understood. Did you understand? Did they say what you think they said? And so check your understanding that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That'd be that's a great way as well, for sure. And Monir, without grammar, what might be my speaking in English, sir? Without grammar. I honestly think you need at least a basic level of grammar in order to speak in English that isn't completely broken, to be honest. What do you think, Am?
I don't know if I'm impartial on this because I am a grammar geek. I love grammar. I love teaching grammar. So for me, I would say that yeah, it's important. But is it the most important thing? No, I think the most important thing for me is clarity, is to be understood. So, and you need to have a certain level of grammar for that. But your communication in most instances, unless you're sitting an exam, doesn't have to be perfect. And no one is judging you negatively if you use the wrong verb tense, like in a social situation, the people you're talking with, nobody cares. They're not thinking, oh my God, that's awful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Near, I'm joining from Bangladesh, sir. Okay. And what if I talk slang in English? I think you mean slang in
Slang,
English.
yeah.
Well, Slang is normal. I think slang is really normal, even in a business setting, when things are really formal. People might throw in a little slang here or there just to lighten the mood. So I would say it is important to understand it, but more importantly, to understand when it's appropriate and when it is inappropriate, I would just say.
And there's certain what would be defined as slang that are essential for everyday life. Like if you lived in England, for example, you need to know that the word quid is a pound, you know, because if you're in a shop or you're asking somebody the price of something, how much is it? It's 50 quid, it's 50 pounds. Or people will say, oh, it's a tenner, it's 10 pounds, it's a fiver, it's 5 pounds. Everybody uses this language. You know, it's not street language. It's not impolite. Is it official standard language? No, but everybody uses it. Or the loo. Again, in England, everyone will say, oh, where's the loo? Being the toilet or the bathroom. So things like that. I think some slang is really, really important.
Yeah, that's true. And honestly, I think in a lot of these contexts too, like quid, I actually didn't even know that. I just learned that now. I've never been to England or the UK. But like even quid, without knowing what it meant, you could still kind of guess what they're referring to based on the context by which it was delivered. So eventually you should be able to use critical thinking skills too. Don't try to overthink things too much. There are going to be a lot of circumstances throughout your life, especially if English isn't your first language, where you're probably going to be able to just guess what something means based on the context. So there you go. Don't try to nitpick everything. Story of freedom. Good evening, bro. Do you have a cold? No, I do not have a cold. My throat just sucks. I don't know why. It's maybe the change of season is making my throat dry, but shout out to you. Ahmed Zain, hello.
Hi.
Hello, Ahmed. Welcome back to the stream. Luis, can you share some tips on how to overcome mental blocks when speaking English?
Mm-hmm.
What do you say, Anne?
Oof. Oh, that's tough when you have a mental block, and it's always at the worst possible time, isn't it? Always at the worst time. Don't panic, I think, is the main thing. Don't panic. Just remember that native speakers have mental blocks too. You know, it's not necessarily a question of a language issue. It just happens sometimes. So take a deep breath and just, say to the person you're talking to, I'm sorry, I'm having a mental block. Just need a minute.
Yeah, for sure. I would just take the pressure off yourself, especially if you're dealing with adults. They're usually mature enough to understand that English isn't your first language. They should have patience with you. Maybe even try to help you out. Yeah. And I mean, you can just slow down your speech, take your time, collect your thoughts. You can even tell them, sorry, I don't know how to say this in English. Let me think. Like, and it doesn't have to be a big deal for sure. And that's just performance anxiety in general. Once you can wrap your head around the idea that no one actually cares about things that you do that may embarrass you, at the end of the day, people are so caught up in their own lives that they really won't care. At the end of the day, it really isn't a big deal if you do something that you feel is embarrassing. People will forget about it sooner than you probably think. So there you go. Fats, hi, hello, shout out to you, Fats. And we're at the 45 minute mark, so we're gonna wrap it up in about 5 or 10 minutes. So if you have any last questions, you can ask them. And I have another question for you, Emma. So when it comes to pronunciation challenges, how should someone tangibly go about improving their pronunciation? Let's say they want to move to London, England, and they want to be able to pronounce words like an English person.
Well, you really I think it's important in this case to have a teacher, to have a tutor. If you don't have a tutor, then that makes it more complicated. But again, I think with pronunciation, you need to imitate. You know, it's how we learn as kids. We imitate our parents, we imitate everything that we hear. So I think that's the way forward. Listen and repeat. Listen and repeat. But individual words, that's okay. But you want to be practicing whole sentences with the weak forms as well. So you'll find actually there's a lady, I just started following her on Instagram, although I'm having a mental block right now and I can't remember her name. She does little pronunciation snippets and she does the whole phrase. So, you know, you can see, like, instead of what is it? What is it? Like that. So I think it's really important to practice chunks of language and not just individual words.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, pronunciation is tough. And one question was just more of like a philosophical question, I guess. Do you think people should strive to speak like native English speakers? Or do you think they should just embrace their accent and just accept
Okay,
it?
so I get kind of a lot of people say to me because my accent, I guess you would describe it as British received pronunciation. I say British, I know the term is problematic. I'm English from the south of England, which for years was considered as BBC English. It was like the standard. But there aren't that many people that speak, you know, with received pronunciation anymore. So, like, I don't know if you've ever heard Adele speak. Oh my goodness, it can be very difficult to understand for a non-native speaker. So, the thing about accent, I don't think that one accent is better than another. First of all, I think that's really important. Whatever accent that you have, whether you've learned from an American or a Brit or whatever, I don't think one's better than the other. And I don't think that you need to lose your accent either in order to be considered fluent and a proficient native speaker. You need to pronounce things accurately if you're going for proficiency level, but you don't need to sound native 100%. You don't need to lose whatever your native accent is.
Yeah,
My opinion.
exactly. You don't necessarily need to be perfect. The most important thing at the end of the day is that native speakers can understand what you're saying, and you can understand what native speakers are saying to you. I would say it's more of a personal decision, I think. If you really want to do it, it is possible. Just know that I personally think it's unrealistic without living in an English-speaking region and without totally immersing yourself for a pretty long period of time. Because that's honestly just a natural phenomenon. When you live somewhere for long enough, you'll start walking like them, talking like them, using the same informal and formal language that they use. I think to accomplish this without immersion will be maybe not impossible, but extremely difficult and extremely unlikely. But it would be a personal decision one would have to make, I would definitely say.
Yeah, for sure.
And then final thing would just be cultural differences. So we can clearly see, especially in multicultural places, maybe London, England, New York City, big cities with a ton of people from a ton of different places around the world. There's usually a clash of cultures, oftentimes. It's important to note that culture is tied with language as well. So some things that might be polite or even normal socially in your native language may not be polite or socially normal in the English language. So it's important to note that nuance as well. Do you think this is just an experience thing, or is there actually some way people could go about learning how to really differentiate the smaller nuances between their native language and the English language?
I think it's important to, yeah, you can pick that stuff up, but I do think it's important to actively seek out that information. If you're going to live in another country, do a little research. What is appropriate? What is not appropriate? Certain topics of conversation, for example, certain questions that you just don't ask. In the UK, and I think in any most English-speaking countries, you don't ask about money. People don't talk about that. So, don't ask someone how much they earn. I think it is important to save embarrassment, and not just the language either, but the customs in general. In England, if we have a cold, we blow our nose into a tissue. This is perfectly okay to do in public. But I lived in Indonesia for a year, and I did that in a classroom. My students were laughing, and then they told me, they're like, oh, don't do that, that's really impolite. And I was horrified. I was like, oh God, why didn't anybody tell me this, beforehand? Wow. So yeah, very yeah. Embarrassing. So do your research. Definitely.
Absolutely. The only thing that comes to mind when I think about it is driving. It's in some countries, a stop sign doesn't really mean anything.
Some
countries, you actually stop
the stop sign. Just there for decorative purposes.
It's some countries you signal when you're going to turn. In some countries, we'll just figure it out. So that's another thing too. But Damien here, a fantastic crossover. Yes indeed, Damien. Okay, guys, so unless you guys have any other questions, we'll wrap it up here. We covered a lot about speaking, covered every aspect I think I could think of when it comes to speaking, reasons why you probably are struggling to speak English, and precisely what you need to do to improve it. So there you go. And Historian of Freedom says, M's teacher's English is perfect and clearly like Canadian people. I will say, for an English person, you don't sound difficult to understand. You don't sound super, super British, I guess, or super English, I guess I should say. I think there's some people from Northern England who are really difficult to understand, I've heard in the past. And,
difficult for native speakers too,
and I always tell my audience too, I'm not fond personally of the British accent because I'm Canadian, and obviously it sounds foreign to me, although I'm sure British people would say the same thing about Americans or Canadians, it's like two different worlds. And Australian English too. As a native speaker, I have trouble understanding both British and Australian. So if you guys are trying to learn the different accents, I'd say just pick the one that's most applicable to what you're going to use. You're going to drive yourself crazy if you try to understand all the different dialects and all the different accents.
If you're higher level, then a really great thing, reality TV. Watch reality TV, because it's not script. Well, some people say it's scripted. I guess some of them are. It's not supposed to be scripted. Cookery shows, this kind of thing, because people don't just talk about the food. They talk about other things. They talk about their lives. And you get a range of accents there because the contestants come from all over the country or from different countries. So I think that's helpful. And
yeah, definitely. And if you ever plan to live in a big city, you're going to hear people speaking English with an Indian accent, with a Chinese accent, Japanese accent, with a Brazilian accent. So I mean, naturally you'd pick that up if you live in a big city. But if you don't live in an English speaking region, focus on the accent that you find will be the most useful for your particular lifestyle, for sure. Yeah. Right, and where can they find you on social media?
I'm on YouTube, English with M. I do longer videos and also shorts. I try to post something every day. I'm also on Instagram, but my Instagram name, unfortunately, is not English with M. It's Ing, E-N-G, underscore, with, underscore, M. So it's a little different, yeah. TikTok, English with M. And I am on Facebook too, although I've been neglecting it lately. I need to get back on that. So yeah, I'm everywhere. I'm all over social media.
There you go, guys. You can find her everywhere. And Ross, website same
thing. As well, just to throw that in there. My website is englishwithm.com. Very easy. Right.
And then do you have any other projects coming up, or what can people expect to see on your website if they go visit English with them?
The website, again, I've been neglecting a bit recently. I want to start doing more blog posts. And my intention with the blog is to provide audios as well, so people can listen and read. So that's something I'm planning on doing. I'm also planning on starting live streams as well. That will be a YouTube thing, and also probably Instagram too. Spread it all over the place. So that's something I'm planning on doing in the coming months. I also teach private classes, just opening some groups up. So if you're interested in a group conversation class, minimum 2 students, maximum 6, then drop me an email at info.englishwithm@gmail.com, and you can find information about that also on my Instagram and my website. Not on YouTube currently, although I'm gonna update and put that in too.
Okay, solid. And yeah, live streaming, that's a good call. Yeah, I know the audiences, they usually appreciate being able to ask questions to the actual teacher on content. So I'm sure your audience will appreciate that a lot. And yeah, guys, go check out English with M. If you need lessons, there you go. There's a native speaker who can help you. And for us, it's simple. It's just ARC English, A-R-C English on all platforms. You'll find us everywhere. And tomorrow, we're likely going to do a Q&A around the same time as today, around 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. So you can catch us there. And other than that, if you guys... would like any other resources to improve your English, you can just shoot us a message on Instagram, join our WhatsApp group, Telegram, whatever it is, and we would be happy to help you. And Historian of Freedom has one last question. Is M teacher originally from English? You mean from England or Gaelic?
Yeah, I'm from the south of England, Hampshire is the county, and I grew up in a small village there.
But there you go. Abba Chan, thanks, teachers, of course. Abba. Okay. All right, guys. If you have anything, you know where to find us. And till next time.
Thanks, guys.